You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.
Someone who is in the process of not only opening our eyes, but helping us see alternatives is Marcelo Saavedra. He's my guest this morning. He's an indigenous Bolivian leader and also a professor at the University of Ottawa. Welcome to our show, Marcelo.
Yes. Hello, Silvia. It's good to be with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. In the world today, we are seeing people talking about the crisis that impacts us. And if we were to pick, you know, draw down to three things, I would say that we'd probably say war, climate change, and the economic crisis seem to be all in the same sense of crisis mode that we need to address, something we need to pay attention. And I was wondering if we could start talking a little bit about how does the way in which our language, our way in which we see the world, impact our response to the world. As an indigenous leader and someone who teaches about different knowledges, different ways of seeing the world, how would you help your students navigate their way through these times?
Yeah, thank you very much, Silvia. As indigenous peoples, we have been arguing that the age of petroleum has provided for the age of stupidity, you know, because we have taken, you know, this resource, this natural resource, petroleum oil, as it is very cheap, and it has provided for many things to be inverted in our times. And, you know, if you just see the overconsumption our societies have, the overproduction of all kinds of things, plastic things, especially coming from petroleum, and also the vast amounts of waste that our civilization produces. You know, it is very stupid that we are doing this to ourselves, because we think that we are doing this to some, you know, outside instance like the environment or the wildlife, which is out there. But in fact, we are the wildlife. We are the environment. So we are doing it to ourselves. It also facilitates, it vehicles this sort of stupidity that we are living through. And it's not only me that is saying that. For instance, anthropologist Margaret Mead, so a very well-known anthropologist in the West, she argued that, you know, for most of our life as a species, for 99% of our life as a species, we live in tribes, in small clans, in small groups, not more than 50 persons at a time, and that, you know, nowadays we live in huge cities, mega cities that are quite huge in the capacities of consuming and producing waste. So we cannot really judge anything from our perspective, like from this point in time in the history of humankind. We cannot understand the past, or we cannot really foresee the future, because this is a very anomalous time. We haven't been like this for most of our existences as a species. So, you know, when we hear the news, when we read books, when we tap into any other news or knowledge outlets, we sometimes dismay, we become very pessimistic, we think that there's no way out, and there's nothing that we can do. But in fact, I think one of the products of all these processes of inversion is that we become pessimistic, and when we become pessimistic, we paralyze and we do nothing. And as indigenous peoples, we have taken on the notion of responsibility. Responsibility basically means responsibility, the ability to respond, the ability to keep on flowing, because we are flowing all the time. We are never like the skin-encapsulated egos that we think we are. We are changing all the time. Actually, you know, the Silvia that started the show, I don't know how many time ago, maybe a couple of hours ago, is not the same Silvia that is now listening to me talking. You have been changing, you know, like even your body has been, like some of your cells now are dead right now and have been replaced by others. And in the course of days, we change completely our bodies. This is just talking physically, but also like spiritually, energetically, we are flowing all the time. We are just taking elements from Mother Earth that we call Pachamama in the Andean region, and we are incorporating this element into our beings, so our bodies also become new bodies, and also we have like feelings, we have energy, powering our existences. So everything is flowing all the time, and that when we get paralyzed, when we become pessimistic, when we say, oh geez, you know, the forces out there are so huge, there's nothing I can do as an individual, then we become paralyzed and there's a stagnation. We have to become responsible. We have to be able to respond to many things. For one thing, we have to be honorable to our ancestors, you know, to our grandparents, and not only to our physical grandparents, but also to our very far away grandparents, like the Tree Nation, you know, the first living instances that appear on Mother Earth about 4 billion years ago. We have to be true also to our future generations, and as an indigenous person, I say up to the seventh skin, and that means like hundreds of years, you know. So we have to think about those things, and that we have to be responsible to them. I just came back from Toronto, where we had a very successful event called Lessons from Bolivia, Building a Global Movement for Climate Justice. And one of the speakers, Ian Angus, he said something very interesting. You know, this is coming from somebody who's not indigenous, who has basically been an intellectual in Western thought, you know. He's a Marxist. And he said, after I talked, I was the first one to talk there in this event, and then he took on what I was saying. He understood what I was saying about the responsibilities we have towards everything else, and he said, let's be good ancestors. And for me, that's quite powerful, because I think if we want to become responsible, it's quite simple. We just have to know that we have to be good ancestors, that our children and the children of our children and so on, they are going to some time in the future, they are going to look back and they say, oh geez, you know, that person, he was a good ancestor because he was responsible and he took action. He continued flowing. He didn't stop flowing. He was still the river that we all are, and that he never became stagnant, and he made these changes for us so we can exist today. So I think the fact is just, you know, if you have a message for you this morning, is arrange your days just to be a good ancestor for your generations to come. In our cultures, we don't think that, first of all, we don't have linear time. We don't think there is the past that is like in our backs, and there's a future waiting for us just ahead of us. We live into circular times, you know. And in that notion, like for instance, in my particular culture, the Aymara culture, actually our past are ahead of us. Our future is on our back, because our future, we don't say future, we say what is to come. Because in indigenous cultures, usually there is not nouns. Everything becomes an action. Just to show you again that in indigenous cultures, everything is flowing all the time. Everything is understood in terms of actions. So the future is on our backs, because it is our responsibility. We have to carry it around with our existences throughout this life. And the past is ahead of us, because it's something that we can see and that we can learn from.
I was just going to point out how beautiful you explained that, you know, in terms of our own notions of who we are, whether we're a part of a whole or whether we are, you know, in this being architecture as part of a particular environment. So what role then does the words we use? For instance, I was taking an art course with several students, and one of the women in the course said, oh, you know, what's the big deal if someone cuts a forest? You know, it's just like a crop. It's just like cutting corn. You know, there's no difference. And it just hit me to the core. How can someone not see the difference between an ecosystem that's alive because of these amazing trees and, you know, the biodiversity that exists in a crop that's grown that will die right after it comes to maturity. So how would you open someone like that? How would you open their eyes to not only adopt a new way of new words to describe their world, but new words to describe their being in this world?
Yeah. Yeah, I me too. You know, when I give my courses, I find, you know, some of my students having this line of thought that they see themselves as some, you know, people separated from the environment. But in fact, you know, we are not separated. We are still the old Homo sapiens that appeared like 200,000 years ago. We are the same old folk that started to walk on two legs, you know. We haven't really changed. And in our legends and our myths and our rituals, ceremonies, prophecies, and so on, we always acknowledge this fact that we are just one piece in the mysterious circle of life. We are not the summit of evolution as we think we are. Unfortunately, in the Western civilization, we live in a shattered world. Everything is completely dissected, and we think that by dissecting things, we're going to find the fundamental blocks of existence of everything. Like, for instance, I can take any example of any science, for instance, in biology, for let's say, or physics. You know, they think that by, you know, dissecting dissecting matter, they are going to eventually find what is the fundamental block of matter. They have gone so far as you know, isolating the electron, and for a time they said, you know, we have found a fundamental block that everything is composed of, and it's the electrons. But then they collided these electrons, and when this electron was shattered, they found another pieces to the electron. So they said, oh, now we found another thing which is more fundamental than the electron itself, like quarks, muons, and so on. And they keep on doing this, and they keep on finding, you know, smaller and smaller particles, and every time they come out and they say, oh, you know, we found the fundamental blocks. And they're going to keep on doing that, you know, until infinity, because we have three infinities, and one of the infinities is the minute. So you keep on going with your, you know, very powerful microscopes to the minute, and you keep on finding fundamental particles, like, smaller and smaller every time. The other infinity is the big, you know, the huge. So we have technologies that allow us to see very far in space and time, in the continuum of space-time, trying to find the edges of our universe. And of course, they are never going to find that because it's infinity. The other infinity, for the sake of being complete in my sentence, is complexity. You know, so things tend to become more complex and more complex as they evolve through our lives. Indigenous cultures, and I can tell you that, you know, I've been studying indigenous cultures on Turtle Island, like Mi'kmaq people, Algonquin people, Anishinaabe people, Blackfoot people, Hopi people, the Mayas, the Aztecs, my own people, the Inca Confederacy, Aymara people. You know, I can keep on naming nations. And we have the same understanding. We are just one single part of Mother Earth. The animals, the other nations, the animal nation, the plant nation, the tree nation, the marine animals nation, the immaterial world, you know, and all these other aspects of reality. We say that in the beginning, they came into a circle to take decisions, because that's how we take decisions, in a circle where everybody is equal to each other, and we, because we're in our circle, we can see each other in the eye, so we don't have anything to hide. So they, you know, the other instances of the environment go together in a circle, and they decided, or really they granted us a huge responsibility in the circle. First of all, to be the keepers of fire, also to be the ones, the beholders of intelligence, and also to be the guardians of themselves, of all other creatures. So that was the original understanding we had with all other species. And of course, this is in a legend, and it can sound very poetic, It's very true, because you cannot separate yourself from the environment. If you just take a look, anybody of your listeners that is listening to my words, just take a look at your surroundings. Maybe you're in an office, maybe you're in a car, maybe you're just walking down the street, and just look at all the things that are surrounding you. They all come from Mother Earth, everything, including yourself. As a Mi'kmaq elder told me, very beautifully and very elegantly as well, we peel off Mother Earth. And that is very true, you know, because like as you go about, you go to a supermarket, you buy your food. Where does that food come from? We think that it comes from the supermarket, but it doesn't. Eventually, it comes from the four elements of Mother Earth, which are earth, fire, water, and air. Everything is composed of those things. You go to that supermarket, you buy your food, you eat that thing, believing that it's coming from the supermarket, but it's actually coming from Mother Earth. So it gets into your system, you digest it, it becomes your muscles, it becomes your heart, it becomes your thoughts, it becomes your feelings. So you are Mother Earth. There's nothing that can really separate you from Mother Earth. So when you do something to damage your mother, your environment, you're doing it to yourself. So you have to acknowledge that you're just part of the big order of things. And in a way, you are sacred as an individual, because it took our universe just 14.75 billion years to become the person you are. In that sense, you are a very old person. You are 14 billion years old. You know, because if you like analyze yourself, you're going to find that in your body, I'm just talking now here about the bodies, not the spirits, you're going to find that most of your body is composed of the first element that appeared on this particular universe, hydrogen. And then the other elements, oxygen, lithium, iron, whatever, they all formed in the first moments of the creation of this universe. And then, you know, these elements went about, and eventually your spirit took shape into these elements, becoming you. You know, so I guess I would go about like that to that person to make her understand that she's not abstracted from this world. She is this planet. We don't have other planet. We have only one Mother Earth, one planet, and this is the only support system we will ever have, because like even the, you know, the fact that we live on this planet that we call Earth, it's just a wild sequences of events that go against all probabilities. Like, for instance, you know, we used to have a twin planet called Theia, you know, and about more than 5 billion years ago, these two celestial bodies, what we know now as Earth, and the other twin, the Theia, they collided. And the collision was so huge that a chunk of our planet Earth went into space, and it bounced back to our planet, and the debris of Theia, it became the moon. And this is also like magical, because actually the moon is, you know, orbiting our planet, and it gives us the stability we need to have seasons, to have a margin of temperature that is not too big. You know that if the temperature of the planet goes up by 5 degrees, basically most of the species are going to disappear. And so the margins of temperature we have are very fragile. It cannot change too much. It doesn't change too much. Like, for instance, if you measure temperatures in Mars, for instance, you know, the temperatures change wildly, and there's no life in Mars.
I wanted to ask, you know, as you describe this very clear vision, you know, how we are interconnected not only with Mother Earth but with each other, and how this flow of energy that we are at this moment in time using to create destruction and to destroy one, to destroy ourselves essentially, because once we destroy, pollute the water, once we pollute the earth, we're also destroying our ability to survive. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the Cochabamba experience, you know, the ability for indigenous people to, after years, you know, hundreds of years of oppressive, of genocide, their ability to remember, and what role does that memory play in how we not only remember what is to come, but also how do we bring it into being?
Yeah, sure, Silvia. Well, you know, the Cochabamba gathering happened, you know, the heads of the states tried to get together to, you know, to try to get into an understanding about climate change. This happened in Copenhagen in December 2009. So, you know, they got together when they were not reaching any sort of agreement, because, like, the steps they were going to take, they were going to be quite worrisome for countries in the global third world. Evo Morales, the president of Bolivia, and other Latin American leaders took to the streets of Copenhagen to protest against the abusive position of developed countries. And they were joined by hundreds of thousands of people, of grassroots people, just marching in Copenhagen, denouncing the arrogance of these other leaders of states. And on the streets of Copenhagen, people decided to hold another meeting. And Evo Morales said, okay, we can have it in my country, in Cochabamba. So the year after, and in April 2010, this year, you know, there were about, let me just see, there were about 35,000 people that came from all over the planet, from more than 140 countries, officially and unofficially, and they gathered in Cochabamba for several days, and they reached a very important agreement regarding climate change, climate justice or injustice, you know, and that was a response to inability of developed countries and international bureaucracy to do something that is lurking on the destiny of our species. So in the discussions that happened in Cochabamba in 18 tables, actually the you know, the issues that preoccupies us a lot, they were taken on by these people. They came out with resolutions that we know them as the Cochabamba Accord. And actually, one of the results is that, you know, we are supposed to have a global referendum about the rights of Mother Earth, that we are going to bring this to the United Nations and try to, you know, to create a universal declaration of the rights of Mother Earth. So this is a process that is ongoing, and probably next year we're going to have the second Cochabamba summit in Bolivia, maybe not in Cochabamba this time, but somewhere else. But many things have come very clear from this gathering in Cochabamba. For instance, you know, we think that there must be a 50% reduction of domestic greenhouse emissions by developed countries by the period 2013-2017, and that we shouldn't allow more than 1% increase, 1 degree Celsius increase in global temperature, and that, you know, also we have to stabilize the emissions of greenhouse gases up to 300 parts per million, you know, and these are things that are in the Copenhagen Accord that was very much the product of some developed rich countries. This is not addressed at all, or if it's addressed, you know, they were going to allow 3 degrees Celsius to increase in our planet, and that would be disastrous. We cannot allow not even a 1 degree increase. Then also, we talked in the Cochabamba Accord, we talked about the climate debt that developed countries have towards the global south, because, like, you know, the colonial countries, they have come to our territories, our lands, to exploit Mother Nature, and in the process they have just produced a vast amount of toxicity for our Mother Earth and changes in the environment. We have also denounced the fact that the capitalist system is trying to co-opt the system of carbon reductions and to make it just into a market exercise. And that's not a solution, because they are so powerful, they have the means to buy carbon rights from underdeveloped countries, and they continue polluting the planet, you know, so they don't really take measures about preserving our species on our planet. So, you know, the accord that has come in Cochabamba is not only a reflection of the way Bolivian indigenous peoples understand the or try to respond to this climatic crisis. It is also, you know, the product of over 35,000 peoples coming from all over the planet talking about the same things. And just the indigenous peoples are, you know, are leading this movement, because clearly we are mature civilizations. We've been on the planet for thousands of years, and we've kept our cultures, and our cultures were based on the observation of how Mother Earth cycles functions, how the cosmos functions. And I think that's made a big difference in terms of you know, getting a common understanding of all the peoples of the planet. Because I want to, you know, mention something that is very important that we understand. And I'm just going to use an example here. You know, if the ants would be to disappear from the face of the planet, like by tomorrow, let's say, then, you know, in the weeks to come, all other species would also perish. Whereas if the human species is going to disappear from the planet, you know, I can assure you that life would thrive on the planet again. So we have to understand that. And it's not that Mother Earth is going to disappear. It is our species that is at peril, not Mother Earth. Mother Earth is quite resilient. You know, she's been through five massive extinctions. You know, the deepest one has been the Permian massive extinction, which happened 250 million years ago, in which more than 96% of life on the planet disappeared. So extinctions, massive extinctions, they are phenomena that happen on the planet regularly. But at this time, it is the extinction of our kind that is at stake. And it's not that I don't want to be pessimistic and say, okay, you know, extinctions happen, so we are going to disappear, so let's just, you know, enjoy whatever time is left for us. I think we, as a human species, we have been endowed with a very creative intelligence. We have forgotten many things, but we have the ability to still recall these sacred things, that we are just part of Mother Earth, and we can adapt. We, as indigenous peoples, we have shown that we can adapt. After five centuries of colonialism, we have adapted to this new sort of arranging societies. So we can change. We can change. And I think if we just respect each other, I'm not even saying that we should follow the Indians. I'm just saying, let's just respect each other. You know, we have our cultures that are very much attached to Mother Earth, and the Western societies, they have other principles. They are also, in a way, they are also indigenous to this planet, because I don't know anybody born on the moon or Mars. We have all been born on this planet. In that sense, we are all indigenous to this planet. So we have that great responsibility for our children. And this is not a metaphor again. This is really real, you know. Let's be good ancestors.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us. How can people access your work? How do people get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, I use social media. So I am on Facebook. I have a Twitter account. I have several blogs for each of my courses. I have also several articles on the web. You know, I have a website as well. It's called grupoapoyo.org. It's basically in Spanish, though, but we are developing an English, an only English website as well. So the URL would be www.grupoapoyo, which is GRUPOAPOYO, bolivia.org. Or you, if you can just look up in Google Bolivia Action Solidarity Network. That's the organization I am coordinator for.
Thank you so much for being with us. Take
Thank
care.
You, Sylvia.
Cambia lo superficial, cambia también.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.